Here's what I want to say as an introduction. So my name is Jenna, and if you were here last week, Tim walked us through some helpful reflections on what it means to connect with God and with each other and abide in that connection, and all the good things that love and connection bring into our lives. And it was really beautiful. So if you were not here with us, you can catch that on our podcast. And our text for today invites us deeper into that conversation about what it looks like to practice abiding in love. And I think Christ circles back to this often, this abiding idea, because it's not love itself that's so hard for us. We can do love in short spurts. It's the abiding in it, the keeping it going that we need help with. And I think that's maybe because as meaningful and beautiful as love is, it also hurts. Which isn't to say that it harms us. So if we're being harmed, that doesn't sound like love to me. But I do think love hurts sometimes. And when we're hurting, we often just fall out of the practice of love without even realizing it. It's just what we do. So the question I'm inviting us to explore today is this. What does it mean to abide in love when we're hurting? So in the scriptures, the Greek word for this kind of love we're talking about today is agape, which we could think of as a love that's unique to friendship, or like it goes beyond romantic love and family love. It's more a love of choice. It's a love we choose to practice. And agape love between us and another person, it carries with it this sense that we're choosing to wish them well. We're choosing to be interested in their welfare, contributing to their well-being. So I invite you to begin by thinking of a person or people in your life that you are currently choosing to practice abiding in that kind of love with. And here's one of my examples. I asked my friend Donna if I could have her permission to share this story. So this is my friend Donna. We've been friends since we were in middle school. And our friendship hasn't always been easy because our personalities are really different. So for instance, when we were growing up, if there was drama, say, with a friend or a teacher, I was usually the passive-aggressive one. But Donna's a fighter. She always has been. And she's really good at it. And we're now both in our 40s. And whenever I get together with her and I hear her latest fight story, I'm usually like, you are astounding and a little scary. But my friendship with her has taught me something about abiding in love because of how we've continued to practice friendship with each other, even though we're really different. And I'm a little scared of her, but mostly for her. And I'll say this too about agape love. I think we can practice it at any stage in a relationship. So the question then becomes, what does abiding in love look like when we're just getting to know each other? Or later on, when the relationship has maybe become a source of both joy but also pain for both of us? And maybe even later on, when we've perhaps moved away physically or sometimes just emotionally, which happens and is also one of the ways in which love can hurt. So then what does practicing abiding in love from a distance look like? So that's some of where we're headed today. And my hope is we'll leave here with some really concrete things we can experiment with to practice abiding in love when it hurts. So as is our custom, let's read aloud together John 15, verses 9 through 17. All right, so this passage is from the night before Christ died. And here's an icon with Christ, and John's there with the rest of their friends. And Jesus is apparently concerned that his friends will find it difficult to abide in love with him and with each other when he's not physically there with them any longer. And I think we do still find both of those things difficult. And when Christ talks about abiding, it may sound like it sort of has this sense of permanence to it. Like if we abide in love, then we'll never fall out of it. But what if instead abiding means when we get hurt, when we fall out of the practice of love, knowing how to pick it back up again? So let's take a look. Christ says, "As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. I have said these things to you so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete." Meaning there will be times when our joy is not complete. And when we've lost joy in a relationship, it's really difficult to abide in love. So how do we recover our joy when we lose it? How does our joy become complete again? There's an image that stayed with me from this book that Jason and I read when Jordan was a baby. And the book was about the theology of childhood. And this is not the image. I sketched this masterpiece for you all. But the book called this Joy Mountain and talked about the importance of children learning how to fall off Joy Mountain and then climb back up again. And that image came back to me later on when our kids were toddlers, and you know when they just dissolve into a puddle on the floor and all the joy has drained out of them, and there's nothing you can do, like no pushing or punishing or talking them back into joy, like nothing works. And that's in part because we have to learn how to climb back up Joy Mountain ourselves. No one can carry us there. But if we're that child and a grown-up just sits down nearby us, is patient and gentle, not rushing us, we'll gradually start climbing again. Because as children, joy is the natural state. Like children naturally seek it out on their own. So the motivation is already there. And once we learn to climb back up again, from then on, we'll always know how to do it. Now, I don't think I learned how to do it as a child. So I think as an adult, I've had to really work to learn this. But I do think that we can learn it at any age. And so I wonder if the relationship between joy and love might be this. When we're hurting, when we've fallen off the mountain, we don't have much access to the loving parts of our brain until we climb back up again. So could this maybe be a helpful way to think about what it means to abide in love? Like learning how to fall off and climb back up again. Fall off and climb back up again. So that my joy may be in you and your joy may be complete. The Greek here means filled up, so that your joy may be filled up again. So maybe as a spiritual practice, the next time we're hurting, maybe this image will come back to us and we'll think, well, I've fallen off the mountain again. And then we'll perhaps look around, whatever that means for us, and notice God sitting down beside us, patient and gentle, not rushing us. So maybe we'll learn how to not rush ourselves and not rush to go work it out with the other person before we've climbed back up the mountain again and the loving parts of our brain have come back online. Okay, let's keep going. So the next question for us about abiding in love might be this. When we're hurting, when we've fallen off the mountain, how do we receive the love we need from God so we can return to love again? Christ says, "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends." So I think I've maybe understood this somewhat intellectually. Like, that my ability to love comes from receiving love from God. But the receiving part, like how to do that, has often felt like a mystery. And lately I've been asking, like, what does that really mean to receive what I need from God? Because the older I get, the more I discover how it really hurts to love people. It creates a lot of needs in us. So I'd like to invite you to begin thinking specifically about the ways you found that love is beautiful and also hurts. I mean, in really good relationships that are like good and beneficial. So one way I've found is this. I've recently noticed these days that when my friends are going through an unusually stressful time, I've started to feel worried that if their stress gets too high, that something will happen to them. Like they'll get injured, or I'll receive a phone call that they've gotten in a bad accident or something. And it's not rational, because my friends actually handle stress really well. But I worry. And with my attachment history, I kind of think that's a good sign that I'm feeling that way. I think it's growth. I think it's a positive thing. But I'm finding in this season of life, the worry that something might happen to one of my friends is one of the ways in which love hurts. And I haven't always known how to receive what I need from God to keep abiding in love when it hurts. But I'll share with you something that I've found recently helpful. So I went to see a counselor. This was a little while back. And in the first session, she said, well, what do you want to work on? And I said, well, I'd like to not get hurt as often. And she was like, oh, I can't help you with that. And I was like, well, what can you help me with? And she pulled out her phone and she showed me this video. And it was of a turtle flipped over on its back. And she said, so if you're trying to never get flipped over, it's the wrong goal. What you want is to learn how to flip back over. So if you'll hang with me for just a moment, this is what I imagine it might mean to receive from God. So take a look at the video and then we'll talk about it. Okay, so here's the turtle. It struggles. This goes on for a long time. I edited it. But then it starts to just rest. And this turtle's not helping it. She's not coming over. So it's just resting and receiving. And then it flips itself back over. Yeah. Okay. Email me. I'll send you the video. So here's what I want to say. Getting flipped over isn't the same as being harmed. Evidently, healthy turtles accidentally get flipped over all the time. And they're not harmed, but they do need to learn how to right themselves. So what's it like for us when we get flipped over? When we're hurt or angry or ashamed or scared, so that we no longer have access to the loving parts of our brain? And what if abiding in love means learning how to get flipped over and right ourselves. Flipped over and right ourselves. Jesus says, this is my command, that you love one another as I have loved you. So, reading that, I've been asking myself, what does that mean, as I have loved you? How does God love me? And when I'm flipped over, how can I receive that love, those things that I need, in a really tangible way, and learn how to right myself? So I've been trying some small experiments. You can see what works for you. When love hurts and I'm flipped over, these days, this practice for me looks something like this. So this over here on the left is my blanket. I didn't even fold it for y'all. I just took a picture of it. And this is a candle. I can't describe to you how it smells. It just smells really good. And some water. I found that having something that's not caffeine or alcohol helps me write myself quicker. So here are a few other ideas I know some folks find it helpful to be outside in nature or be moving or listening to music. Whatever helps us to receive what we need from God, that love directly from God in a tangible, felt way. Instead of rushing off to go work it out with the other person before we've righted ourselves and the more loving parts of our brain have come back online. So maybe I invite us all to just pick something to experiment with. And the next time we're flipped over, it helps to plan ahead because it's hard to think of these things when we're actually flipped over. So maybe plan ahead, but then like see what helps you receive love from God in a really tangible way. Okay. So a final question about the practice of abiding in love might be this. How might we practice being friends with God, abiding in love as friends with God, or allowing God to be friends with us? So Christ says, I do not call you servants any longer because the servant does not know what the master is doing, but I've called you friends because I've made known to you everything that I have heard from the Father. So what's it like to hear God call you friend? For me, what I think of when I hear that is the same thing I think of when I think of the people in my life who call me friend. I think about all the ways that I feel like I'm not enough, like I'm not present enough or helpful enough or available enough. And when I think about that, my tendency often is to like pull back. I haven't always known how to abide in love as an imperfect friend. But then I think about the people in my life that I call friend, and their imperfections really don't change my love for them. So abiding in love must somehow include our imperfections. And I recently heard a story that spoke to me about this. So you may have heard this too. About 5 years ago, a husband and wife opened up a bookstore in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And they're a young couple, and one of their grandfathers had a Smith Corona typewriter. And so they thought, wouldn't it be fun to put a typewriter in the store and let people use it? And people did start using it. And people would write confessions and jokes and marriage proposals. And each night before they locked the doors and shut down the cash register, the husband or wife would go to the typewriter and pull the page and read the messages people had typed that day and then file it away. And it became sort of like a diary of the ordinary, imperfect people in that town. So here's an interview with the bookstore owners where they took turns reading some of the messages. And so I want you to take a listen.
Okay, let's take turns. You go first.
When we were younger, we would color our skies purple, our trees blue, and it always looked perfect to us.
Tillery?
2 days sober, thrilled about the first, terrified of the second. Do not have enough money to buy a book today, but I am comfortable here. Thank you.
Wow. If I had to write a 5-paragraph essay on this thing, I would withdraw from middle school.
All right. Dear Max, you are a good old cat. I'm sorry I pushed you off the couch sometimes when you wanted to sit in my lap and I was touched out from the babies and my eyes were itching. I'm sorry for the time I cut your skin by accident trying to cut out the mats and didn't realize how bad it was at first. I'm sorry I sometimes let your nails get too long or ran out of wet food, and that I let you go an extra day without your sub-Q fluids at the end. There are a lot of opportunities to not take perfect care of you, as I had intended, but I hope you felt that those were the rare exception in the 6 years you were with us. I had a great day with you yesterday, and hope you enjoyed some of your favorite things on your last day. It will always be a special memory for me. Please know you are loved, and we will always remember you. Love, your human mama.
Everyone we choose to love in our lives, we do so imperfectly. And the older I get, the more I see that imperfect love is no less meaningful and beautiful. And the people in our life, our friends and loved ones and pets, choose to love us not because we're perfect, but because we're willing to allow ourselves to be chosen. Christ says, I choose you and appointed you to go bear fruit, fruit that will last, so that the Father will give you whatever you ask in my name. Therefore, I am giving you these commands so that you may love one another. I think this is the heart of the gospel, that Christ called us friend and was willing to lay down his life for us, imperfect as we are. And when we're willing to allow ourselves to be chosen by God, to be called friend of God, good things, fruit, happen. And not because we figured out how to do it perfectly. So let's not allow our imperfections to cause us to doubt whether or not we're good friend material. Let's just practice being imperfect friends. And let's consider ways in which abiding in love means learning how to be imperfect and love anyway. Learning to fall out of the practice of love, lose our joy, get flipped over, and then receive from God, right ourselves, and pick the practice back up again. It's not easy, but our imperfections do not disqualify us from love. So we can practice abiding in it. I'd like to leave us with these words of encouragement from the poet Rainer Maria Rilke, who says this: to love is good, love being difficult. Love is at first not anything that means uniting with another. It is a high inducement to us as individuals to ripen, to become something. It lays a great exacting claim upon us. With our whole being, with all our forces gathered close about our lonely, timid, upward beating hearts, we must learn to love. For one human being to love another, that is the ultimate work for which all other work is but preparation. Please pray with me. God, we love you imperfectly, but we do. Thank you for being patient with us while we're still learning. Help us continue to practice. Help us laugh at how hard it feels sometimes. And help us be patient with ourselves and with one another. We pray this in Christ's name. Amen.